He went, was able to go see his cousin in West Berlin, that's in 33 years.
When this wall break, I saw people changing, getting more open, more ready to, for new things like the gospel.
At the dawn of the 1990s, world attention again focused on the German fatherland. Hammers, once signs of political separation, became new signs of freedom as barriers were broken down. These images blend with older Germanic oppressions, dark, dense forests where pagan crowds believed the trees were holy. This island was known for composers such as Beethoven and Bach. Great thinkers such as Goethe and Kant, royal governments of Saxon kings, and castles along the Rhine. Religious traditions and reformations. And mingled with these elements of Germany past and present, new spiritual upwellings envisioned by the Old Testament prophet Isaiah.
How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, that publisheth salvation, that saith unto Zion, Thy God reigneth.
Zion, for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is established where every members congregate. Behind the wall in the German Democratic Republic, the Church's growth and development fascinated non-members and inspired Latter-day Saints worldwide. To understand how and why, under harsh conditions, the German Latter-day Saints have flourished, one must know something of their love of freedom, their ability to forgive, and the strength of their fellowship. These are the building blocks of their fortress of faith. Reporter Bill Silcock.
Germany became a cradle of religious liberty in the 16th century. Martin Luther, once a miner's son, later a religious scholar, taught that man had access to God without the intercession of clergy. On the last day of October, 1517, Martin Luther posted on the door here of the Castle Church in Wittenberg the 95 Theses written in Latin. It set off a debate by theologians, and Martin Luther had ignited the fires of the Reformation movement. Luther spoke out against indulgences, the practice of buying forgiveness of sin. Luther's publications rocked Rome and were ordered burned. He replied by burning his excommunication decree. The Duke of Saxony gave Luther refuge in a castle near Eisenach, where he hid for nearly a year. Here, he translated the New Testament from Greek to German. Some 300 years later, Joseph Smith, the founder of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, believed Luther's translation was the most correct. Isolated in his castle room, Luther wrote about with evil spirits and found birds on the windowsill to be his only companions in this crucible of faith. Theologians suggest the castle became a metaphor for Luther. As the castle was Luther's refuge, so is God a place of safety for the human spirit. Luther expressed this concept in his hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. Latter-day Saints in Germany not only sing Luther's hymn today, but his idea of congregational singing is a vital part of Latter-day Saint worship services. The Reformer brought light to the Dark Ages. Scholar Peter Freiba is today the pastor of Luther's Wittenberg Church.
Das Mittelalter, die Zeiten der Luther lebte, war ein düsterer Zeit.
The Middle Ages, the time in which Luther lived, was a dark time. I read much about the suffering which Luther lived. So on the one hand, it was a dark feeling. But on the other, a feeling of incredible light, because with Luther, freedom came into the church, and therefore also into the world. The Reformation brought freedom to mankind.
Martin Luther spent the last 20 years of his life as a family man, marrying a nun named Catherine, and saying, wifely status should be elevated from housekeeper to helpmate. Luther believed a father could baptize his own child if a priest wasn't available. And when one of his six children died, a girl named Magdalena, he spoke of eternal life, saying, she will rise and shine like a star. Yes, like the sun. The spirit of freedom, a legacy of Martin Luther, sounded forth at the end of the 1980s in this part of Germany. Historians like Horst Dahler believe religion has been instrumental in bringing about the collapse of communism.
People gathered into the churches in this country and from there marched to City Hall to call the mayors to accountability. The church became the place where people, not just Christians, were able to articulate their frustrations, fears, and hopes. The church proved itself capable of serving as a mouthpiece for those who could not speak.
Manfred Schütze is a German Latter-day Saint religious educator who believes Luther made fundamental contributions to religion and freedom.
Today I think that Martin Luther brought to us freedom in the gospel. And I think in this time, in our country and in the whole world, freedom that we can feel joy in the gospel.
Leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, such as Thomas S. Monson, believe Luther's commitment to religious freedom brought more than a reformation.
Well, as we think of Martin Luther and the other reformers, we come to the conclusion that they paved the way, in part, for the restoration of the gospel. They gave their lives for the beliefs which they held.
Hamburg was the site of the introduction of the German translation of the Book of Mormon and the organization of the first German mission of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 1852. But missionary work was more successful in Dresden, 225 miles southeast. The first convert on German soil in the Kingdom of Saxony was Karl Gottfried Maeser in 1854. The 26-year-old professor was at the top of the social ladder in Dresden.
Here in the old Saxon town of Meissen, Karl Gottfried Maeser was born. He went to school here along with his brothers and sisters. He was such a diligent student that at the age of 11, he actually went blind for a few months from studying so hard. His education was made possible by the work of his father. He was the head painter at the porcelain factory across the river. Maeser invited missionaries into his home in Meissen, and despite his father's opposition, was baptized along with two other educators in the Elbe River, Sunday, October 14th, 1855. LDS Apostle Franklin D. Richards, then president of the European Mission, performed the ordinance at night to protect the group from political opposition. Maeser immigrated to America, but returned in 1867 as president of the Swiss and German Mission. Der Stern, a magazine he founded for German-speaking Latter-day Saints, is still published today. Considered the founding father of Brigham Young University, Karl Maeser has left a legacy of learning for Latter-day Saints, and Maeser's legacy lives today in Meissen. A commemorative plaque on his former home was dedicated in 1926 by LDS Apostle James E. Talmage, a former student of Dr. Maeser. Unveiling the plaque was a direct Maeser descendant, Myron Maeser Crandall.
As I got there just a month before, the plaque was unveiled, so I said that in the second story and unveiled the plaque. The main paper in Germany gave almost the whole page right upon the Mormons and what Karl Maeser had done.
Former LDS Church President Heber J. Graham said, if nothing more had been accomplished in Germany than the conversion of Dr. Maeser, the church would have been well paid for all of its efforts in that land. Since Dr. Major's baptism in 1854, LDS missionaries have continued to work in Germany. Nearly 100 years ago, Joseph Ott left a new bride in Utah for a mission to Germany. Tragically, he slipped off his ship as it docked in the frigid weather in Hamburg Harbor. A month later, he was buried in a Dresden cemetery.
One day, when one Dresden lady came to the graveyard, she saw a light shining on that place. She became very curious to find out what it was, and she learned that it was the grave of Joseph A. Ott from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She investigated where she could find that church here in Dresden and became a member. And after her, many generations, strong, good members.
Joseph Ott's grave inspired Tobias Burkhardt, who cleaned it up and planted new flowers.
He said that he just wanted to do something for a missionary who gave his life while in the service of the Lord. And then he said, "I'll never be able to serve a mission as did my father. I feel close to missionary work when I tend this grave where the body of a missionary rests."
In April 1989, Tobias Burkhardt became Elder Burkhardt, one of the first 10 missionaries to leave the German Democratic Republic for the LDS Missionary Training Center in Provo, Utah. The month before, Elder Andreas Baumann was one of the first new missionaries to come into this part of Germany in 40 years.
You're a modern-day pioneer. I'm not proud of being one of the first missionaries in that country. I feel more blessed. It just makes me... It brings me closer to the pioneers. As I've grown up in Switzerland, I've never had that tradition of having pioneers in my family.
Most people envision covered wagons and hand carts when you mention the term pioneers. But the pioneers in our day and age are just as real as they were 160 years ago. The pioneers now are the missionaries in the German Democratic Republic, and the missionaries from the German Democratic Republic. They are creating a society. They're improving the standard of living. They're improving the understanding of the gospel of Jesus Christ wherever they labor.
Throughout German history, church bells have rung out, not only heralding freedom, but at times, warning of war. Enduring the trials of World War II helped German Latter-day Saints grow firm in their faith, building on a foundation of fellowship and forgiveness. Their teacher was Latter-day Saint Apostle Ezra Taft Benson, the classroom, a war-ravaged nation.
The horrors, the atrocities of war were never more evident than here in the cultural city of Dresden. The night of the firebombings remains as a vivid memory in the mind of Edith Krause.
There was a storm, a fire storm, for the air, the source of oxygen, was needed by the fire, and it was seeking for this, and therefore it was stormy. You cannot imagine, it's stormy. And then the fire flowed from one house to the other, and then we had done so much, but now we said we couldn't help to save this house. And then we moved down and went to the lodge to help, and then they came along.
Edith Krause's husband, Walter, remembers how the war, with all its trials and tragedies, deepened his faith.
It must be kind of meinem Leben, Parker.
I must admit there were days in my life when I would look up to heaven, when I saw all the suffering, death, and destruction, and I would say, "Oh, Father, today I just do not understand you." But then I would nevertheless pray, "Father, thy will be done. I endured."
As Hitler's war machine rolled forth in the late summer of 1939, LDS historians say many of the more than 150 missionaries serving in Germany were miraculously evacuated. Helping some to escape was Elder Norman George Siebold. He traveled by train, stopping at the stations, and searched for other elders by whistling a familiar LDS hymn, "Do What Is Right." The missionaries returned to their U.S. homes by ship in the fall of 1939. Faithful German members remained to carry on church work as best they could amidst the agonies of war. Cut off from contact with church headquarters, German saints like Michael Panitch, Harold Fricke, and Anna Marie Fager strengthened each other's faith through fellowship.
When people are in need, in dire need, the more they stick together. And that's how it was with us here in Hamburg. We were always in great danger. The danger to which we were constantly exposed held us together.
Die Not schweißt mehr zusammen. Ich weiß, das war 43, 44.
During the big air raids of 43-44, there were three nights in which there were 40,000 casualties. The transportation systems were worthless. Sometimes it took an entire day to walk to church and back. But the meetings were so spiritually uplifting. One simply doesn't feel that anymore today.
Marie Pinock remembers the suffering in country villages. One winter, her husband brought home a lost boy who had fallen off a sled that was pulled by his mother. The boy was nearly frozen to death.
I didn't even have a pair of pants for the boy, just a skirt. He said he didn't want a skirt because he was a boy. I searched through empty houses in the village until I found a pair of pants. I dressed him. He left to go home to his mother. He was 12 years old, and now we don't know how he is, because he's in the East, and we're here in West Germany. Once his mother wrote me a letter asking that God would return to me and my children the good I had done for her son. And God has fulfilled everything.
The war tested and tried the Latter-day Saints in many ways. Some felt survival under the Nazis was the wisest course to avoid additional bloodshed. Others, like teenager Helmut Huebner, felt a patriotic duty to resist. He monitored BBC radio reports, noting the facts, and, along with two other LDS teenagers, published the truth behind Nazi propaganda. For these actions, two of the LDS youth were sent to prison, and Huebner was tried before Hitler's blood court in Berlin. At age 17, he was beheaded in a Gestapo prison. The loss of life by Latter-day Saints during World War II was staggering. Three acting German mission presidents were among the more than 600 saints who died in this land. As the war came to an end in May of 1945, new trials of starvation and suffering began. The First Presidency sent a young apostle on a mission of mercy to this nation, Ezra Taft Benson.
He came to Hamburg. I sat at front with the choir. He asked the children if they had a favorite song, and he said, "I have one too.
I'm Armin Boy, I'm Armin Boy, I am a Mormon boy. I might be envied by a king, for I am a Mormon boy.
A Mormon boy, for I'm a Mormon boy." Yes,
we were really moved by that. It was one of the greatest experiences I have ever had in the church. He noticed that we were in great need. Most of us were starving and freezing. He had chocolate and oranges passed out to everyone. He had a sewing needle, and his sister told him she didn't have a sewing needle. So he took it out and gave it to her. It was a tremendous experience I will never forget.
The needle came from Ezra's wife, Flora. It was tucked in sewing kits that she sent by mail to her missionary husband.
I shall never forget the saints of Hamburg who appeared on the verge of collapse from starvation. for their small children whom I invited to come to the stand as we emptied our pockets of edibles. Most had never seen these items before because of the wartime conditions.
Apostle Benson and his assistant Frederick Babel made their way to Salbonden, where the oldest LDS chapel on German soil stood, and where a group of saints, including Louisa Moisich and her sister Marie Pena, saw the church leaders, and a cry went up.
The prophetess saw the prophetess on me, and said,
the prophet is here. The prophet is here. And he also got money and things. I think there were needles and knives. He brought one or two wagons of goods and clothing. We had had nothing left. Everything had been taken.
Ezra Taft Benson not only brought physical relief through the LDS Church Welfare Program, but through his teaching about forgiveness, helped bring a spiritual relief to their souls.
In Krieg come present. Benson as a fortress of one side of
the new strength was the visit by President Benson as an apostle. I remember him standing before us in Berlin, and he saw our old clothing. I wrote down the words he spoke. Brothers and sisters, pitch in, let go of hate, live the gospel. We want to rebuild the work in this country.
In 1946, Walter Stover became the new East German mission president. He followed the footsteps of Apostle Benson, bringing new life and color to the Germany of gray despair. Walter Stover remembers meeting with Apostle Benson in a bombed-out Berlin schoolhouse.
I remember very clearly, you know, that people didn't want to go home. They said, you know, the war had cost us everything, all our belongings are lost, our homes, our businesses, and most women had lost their husbands, but something they hadn't, couldn't take from us, that's our testimony.
Latter-day Saints from all over the church contributed to the rescue of the German saints.
Nor will I ever forget the faith of the Dutch saints who accepted our suggestion to grow potatoes to alleviate their own starving conditions and then send a portion of their first harvest to the German people who had been their bitter enemies.
President Benson already had sent a little welfare from Switzerland to save babies. The welfare program had covered a great deal of good and saved many lives.
While the welfare program cared for physical needs, what sustained the spiritual lives of the Latter-day Saints was their testimony, a deeply felt Christian commitment.
I have always been in the church. I've always been active. I was always involved in youth activities. I was primary president. My father was the district president. He was also the branch president, and I was the branch secretary. Then came the war, and we lost everything but our testimonies.
New challenges to the faith and patience of both church members and their leaders came to Germany at the end of World War II, especially those in a newly created nation, the German Democratic Republic, with its tightly controlled borders.
What kind of personal challenges have you had as you've been a member of the church here in this country?
I was a branch president for more than 10 years. Sometimes we had, we felt the pressure from some persons.
Latter-day Saints behind the wall remember being denied promotions because they weren't members of the Communist Party. Harassment included phone tapping and being called in for questioning by the secret police.
I think one of the most surprising things to me was my first visit behind the Iron Curtain. We had no diplomatic relationships with the nation at that time. Our State Department advised against any American going into that country. There were Americans who were being apprehended and incarcerated for one purpose or another, some not on true charges. And so it was a little bit frightening to go through Checkpoint Charlie and see the machine guns and the shepherd dogs and the Doberman pincer dogs waiting for a false move on your part. Anyone who went through the checkpoint at that time recognizes immediately that the persons at the border crossing never smiled. They would attempt to stare you down, and so you simply had to realize that your objective was higher than any earthly authority, and with trust, in you went.
Thomas Monson assumed responsibility for LDS church work in Europe in 1968. Görlitz was the city where he made his first visit to a group of saints in this part of Germany.
We met in a small hall. It was raining, it was dreary, but the spirit of the people, Bill, is the spirit that touched my heart. In that meeting, a very remarkable thing happened to me, Bill. As I stood to speak, I had had in mind about what I wanted to say, but I felt the inspiration, and I followed it, and I made a promise to the people whom I was meeting for the first time. I said, I promise you, in the name of the Lord, that every blessing that accrues to a Latter-day Saint who is faithful in any other nation of the world will be yours. After that promise, I began to realize what I had said. They had no patriarchs for patriarchal blessings. A wall prevented them from going to the temple for their endowment. They had no missionaries among them. They had no ability to hold youth conferences. They couldn't print any of our church material. I want you to know that I offered the most sincere and humble prayer of my life, asking our Heavenly Father to honor that promise. And he did, every whit.
Some 6 years later, in 1974, Thomas Monson led a small group of local LDS church leaders to a hill above the Elbe River near Dresden. One of those present was Gottfried Richter.
Elder Monson, damals ein Apostel.
Thomas S. Monson, an apostle of the Lord Jesus Christ, dedicated this country for the preaching of the gospel. We spoke about the great loyalty of the members here, and he prayed that they could receive the blessings of a patriarch. He prayed that they could have a temple.
I said, O Father, grant that this may be the dawning of a new day for this nation and for thy church in this country. And as I spoke those words, there pealed from a church bell in a steeple far below in the valley that beautiful ringing of chimes. We heard the unmistakable crow of a rooster, heralding the dawning of a new day. As I stood there praying, I felt heat on my face and upon my hands. How could this be? An incessant rain had been falling all morning. But at the conclusion of the prayer, I looked heavenward and noted in the clouds that an opening had taken place and a ray of sunshine was streaming right to the area where we stood, enveloping all of us. From that moment on, I knew that the hand of the Lord was with this work.
For members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, building up the kingdom of the Lord on earth depends on determinate faith and prayer. LDS historians say Apostle Monson's dedicatory prayer in Germany produced visible results, including the construction of new churches.
They've had weekday activities, and they've worshipped on Sunday. 5 years ago, the men in this branch began a new church-building project just down the street. It's a striking example of the faith of the Latter-day Saints in this land.
Ziemlich 5 Jahre hintereinander.
Oh, my brethren have worked almost 5 straight years, sacrificing almost all their personal time so that they could participate in construction of the building. We're happy that through the building program of the church and with the cooperation of the government, this burden has been lifted somewhat.
Yeah.
So that we can now concentrate on our other responsibilities, like missionary work, home teaching.
Laced Branch President Bernd Richter says the elders quorum dug a well by hand in order to bring water to the construction site. Local church members believe Laced is a hallowed village. Ursula Bunfus, who leads the Women's Relief Society, says the church began here because of a dream about missionaries.
eine Frau namens Barbara wohnt hier in diesem Haus.
The woman who lived here said a man whose name was John visited her. A short time later, two missionaries came and brought the gospel to this village. The woman knew their message was the truth, and she invited friends to her home.
For years, the woman's house was used as an LDS chapel. In January 1990, a modern chapel was dedicated by Manfred Schutzte, president of the Leipzig State. Among those who spoke, Walter Krause. He's been responsible for the care and upkeep of some 40 buildings during the isolation years. He became known as the Red Patriarch.
He was the first patriarch in a communist country, and the communists called him the Red Patriarch. Red Patriarch. He was really outspoken, fearless, cheerful, straight ahead.
Some people make a fist. That won't bring blessings. Recently I saw a young man with fist raised in defiance, and he said, "You probably don't do this, do you, Grandpa?" I said, "Never has a raised fist brought about anything but sorrow. The only way to improve our lives is to learn to fold our hands in prayer during the difficult times."
Many other LDS chapels have been built in recent years, in Karl Marxstadt and Plauen, in Zwickau and Dresden. At the dedication of the Stake Center in Dresden, LDS Apostle Elder Russell M. Nelson followed in the footsteps of Ezra Taft Benson and Thomas S. Monson as the church official with responsibility for Europe. Apostle Nelson put the construction phase of church growth into perspective.
But in a way, the building is not as important as the people.
Aber irgendwie ist dieses Gebäude doch nicht so wichtig wie die Menschen.
The people must dedicate themselves,
denn die Menschen müssen sich selbst weihen,
to the truth,
weihen der Wahrheit.
And as they do,
und wenn sie das tun,
they will be good citizens of their fatherland,
dann werden sie auch gute Bürger ihres Vaterlandes sein,
and good sons and daughters of their Father in heaven.
The most significant building for Latter-day Saints is the temple. LDS prophet Spencer W. Kimball charged Apostle Monson to find a way for a temple to be built for the saints in this part of Germany and in the nearby East Bloc nations. While the brethren met with government leaders, church attorney Jürgen Varnke played a key behind-the-scenes role in obtaining the legal permission.
When you come to orders and when you work for a church for such a project, you always feel that there is someone, some power who is helping, so that the borders are overcome. Not without my help, because my help and the lawyer just come to the border. When my profession really could help. And then somehow, it went on.
News that a border had been opened and that an LDS temple would be built behind the Iron Curtain amazed Latter-day Saints all over the world. But for those in the German Democratic Republic, it was a time of rededication and even greater sacrifice.
When the temple was dedicated, 2.5 years later, we had about 890,000 marks in this fund. That means about 9 times more than what was expected from a stake in the western part of Europe. And that's what I call faith.
On Friday, June 28, 1985, church leaders met inside the Freiburg Temple with the leaders of the German Democratic Republic government. It was the first time ever for such a historic meeting. In the following 2 days, LDS church members and general authorities from Salt Lake City participated in the traditional temple dedication ceremonies.
A temple is kein gewöhnliches Versammlungshaus. A temple is not an ordinary meeting house. A temple is a house of God in which we have the opportunity
to be united for eternity as husband and wife, to be sealed together as a family. The purpose of a temple is to create eternal families.
A temple is a very nice house, and I like the temple because this is the house of God, and God is in this house.
Latter-day Saints and the German Democratic Republic had a temple and congregational chapels, but they also wanted to share their testimonies. That opportunity came when historic meetings in East Berlin in October 1988 resulted in reopening the flow of LDS missionaries in and out of the German Democratic Republic.
For over 20 years, Eric Honecker, chairman of the State Council of the German Democratic Republic, has met with official dignitaries here in this office. Heads of state, prime ministers, and even the Soviet cosmonauts have come to visit with him.
Leading a delegation of LDS church leaders meeting with the then top government leaders of the German Democratic Republic was President Thomas S. Monson.
And the meeting went just as though it had been programmed in our favor. I was asked, what was it I was seeking? And I indicated we were seeking the entry of missionary representatives who were in that nation prior to 1939 when they were withdrawn. And we were also seeking opportunity for the young men and young women of that nation to be called on full-time missions elsewhere. And the permission was granted at the very highest level, and we opened the door for missionary work in the German Democratic Republic.
The Minister for Religious Affairs, Kurt Lettler, says the agreement was reached because the government trusted the Latter-day Saints.
Die Praxis ihres Lebens.
The way they live their lives, this earns this trust. It can be seen in the branches, wards, and stakes.
I think of the proverb, trust in the Lord with all thy heart, and lean not to thine own understanding.
Biblical teachings encouraged President Monson through his 20-year ministry in the German Democratic Republic. The scriptures also inspire young Latter-day Saints called to missionary service. In 1989, Wolfgang Paul became the first Latter-day Saint mission president in this part of Germany in 40 years.
Now behold, a marvelous work is about to come forth among the children of men.
And we came with 3 cars, loaded with 8 missionaries, and no one of us had an idea what we could expect. I've been several times in the DDR and knew the procedure, especially when entering the border. All the inspections and sometimes real problems. So this time we really earnestly prayed before we entered, and then without any check, any problem. It was the first time I saw a border man waving to us when we passed his side of the border.
Therefore, O ye that embark in the service of God, see that ye serve him with all your heart, might, mind, and strength, that ye may stand blameless before God at the last day.
Three days after the missionaries entered the country, they had the first 3 baptisms. For me, it was impressive that the first missionaries really had the spirit to go, to preach, and to achieve.
Now, one typical experience we have made is with an elder riding a streetcar, sitting to someone with whom he wanted to get in contact. At that time, it was not easy to contact people in the public, so he just asked if he could help him after he saw that this man was looking in his documents to find something. And this man just replied, no thanks, and stopped conversation. At the next stop, he got up, gave his card, personal card, to the elder and left the street card. Of course, the elders went to him and taught him the gospel, and within 10 days he was baptized.
Some Germans are introduced to the church by missionaries. Others, like the Karen Kroll family in Berlin, learned about the Latter-day Saint religion from a relative. Karen Kroll's uncle wrote to her from Salt Lake City.
Ich fand die Konfirmation, das war auch something special to me.
He was different from other people. He was warmer and had more feeling. That was nice.
Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints believe they have a responsibility to share their commitment to Christianity. This concept is taught from early childhood.
If I start to grow up in the church and I attend the primary, I think there where I laid the first stones, the first thoughts to grow up in the gospel, and I remember that he sang songs or hymns. I want to go in mission.
At the Church's own home in Freiberg, young children are being prepared for future missionary service. During family home evening, the Bible and the Book of Mormon are studied. There's also time for fun and food. Life of the Chersones of this ancient city includes a frequent trip to the local market. The children attend the local school. Rainier Chersone works as a printer in a shop owned by his father. He's involved in missionary work even at his job.
It's nice to be able to do some things for the church here. For example, we're printing out these calling cards for missionaries to pass out. This is missionary work.
On Sundays, the Chersones worship at the Freiberg LDS Chapel. Evelyn Chersone teaches Christian principles to the young teenage women. At home, she teaches her children.
Yeah, I have a special mom. One thing that impressed me so much was that she made a covenant with the Lord that night. She wanted to have special protection for all her four children until they're grown up. And this really happened.
Throughout Germany, as in many nations, scouting is an important activity for Latter-day Saint young men. Andreas Kleinert is a scout and plans to serve as a missionary.
Father in heaven and Jesus Christ simply expect me to fulfill a mission, and I'll keep that commandment. It will be a lot of fun to go on a mission. I'll have new experiences, be able to perfect myself more, and this will help me in my life's journey. While the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints saw the reopening of missionary work in this part of Germany, world attention focused on the collapse of communist control, climaxing with the reopening of the Berlin Wall in the fall of 1989.
Here at the Brandenburg Gate on a Saturday afternoon, crowds of people gather. Children are laughing and roller skating where once no one was allowed to walk. East Berliners are lining up for a day of shopping and visiting in the West. And what strikes one most here are the sounds, the languages of people from all over the world talking about this new monument to freedom. And in the background, there's a new sound where once guards maintained a stark silence. It's the steady, pounding beat of freedom.
Almost weeps for joy as he sees the developments roll forth, and as we talk about new missions and new opportunities for service, for a way to bless the lives of people, for a way of getting the Book of Mormon in other languages so that it can bless the people of these other nations. He's really thrilled. I'm so grateful that the Lord's preserved his life to see this happen under his administration.
And I think that's the great blessing at the end of his life. during his present leadership of the church, the Berlin Wall came down, and all these governments in the eastern part of Europe changed. In a way, I can say, at the end of his life, he can see part of the fruits of his labor.
President Kimball spoke the truth. His words are prophetic. For all the prophets, back to Joseph Smith. So when you sing it, think all the way back.
I think back to those times when I think it was President Kimball who said that we should pray for the leaders of these people in the East so that their hearts should be melted so that they might let the gospel in the nation with them. And we prayed a lot, and nobody really had any idea how this could come about. But now it's there.
It seems to be, in a way, a blessing to him personally by our Heavenly Father that he should be in a position to see the change from the ravishes of war to the advent of freedom.
Latter-day Saints have shared the amazement felt by nearly all people as they witnessed the restructuring of political boundaries of nearly half a century. It is a time of reflection, realignment, and reassessment of the future. At such times, there is comfort in the basics of life, home, faith, and family.
You now have an opportunity, because of what's happened politically in the fall of 1989, to leave the German Democratic Republic and take your family to the West. Why have you decided to stay?
No. Also, wir bleiben hier in diesem Lande, denn wir haben hier unsere Familie, wir haben hier alle Möglichkeiten in der Kirche und auch in der Arbeit.
No, we're going to stay in this country because we have our family here. We have all opportunities in the church. Our place is here. Zion is here.
I wanted to add that if you can't be happy here, you won't be happy somewhere else either. Happiness has to come from within. And with the gospel, we can be happy here.
I think we have new possibilities. For instance, in between West and East Berlin. So now we have the possibility that our members can go over to the West Berlin Rats and have meetings with West Berlin and West German branches and Rats. So the contacts are closer.
In the port city of Rostock lives the Albrechts, another Latter-day Saint family. At the university, Angelica teaches voice lessons. Education plays a key role in the Albrecht family's life. Roland Albrecht is obtaining a PhD in nautical engineering. The education could mean bright opportunities in the West, but the Albrechts have decided to remain in this part of Germany.
Yes, I was born in this land and we live in this town. We have many friends, we have members in the church. In Rostock, a little branch, and we need it.
Staying in Rostock for the Albrechts means raising their children in a city challenged by economic depression. Despite their crowded apartment, the family has found time and room for the things important in their lives, like raising their children, and providing voluntary leadership opportunity in the local LDS branch.
In this town, many people have gone to West, and we also speak about this, not in this time. We think that God will that we are here in Rostock.
vibrant temple, one can reflect upon the lessons taught through the lives of the saints in this land. Lessons of faith, of freedom, of forgiveness. The saints here have earned the respect of government leaders, the trust of their neighbors, and the love and admiration of fellow saints throughout the world. And the lessons they're teaching are not over yet. Church leaders envision great things radiating forth from this nation. LDS Apostle Elder Russell M. Nelson says, he sees the day when stakes will dot the land, and saints will reach out to neighboring countries, much as the early missionaries did from England to Europe. This place is the center, Elder Nelson says, the citadel of strength radiating to all the world.
Of course, each nation will open up in a unique way. The history is different in every one, but the pattern is going to be the same. There will be initial opposition, and then there will be the fostering of faith. And that faith will bring performance, it will bring obedience on the part of the people, and as they obey the commandments of God, they will be blessed. The Lord has said over and over again that if they obey the commandments of God, they will prosper. So we see this cycle of initial opposition, hardship, deprivation, and then ultimate prosperity and furthering of the faith into the subsequent generations.
These people come from Hungary, and they're just ready to leave, and there is just one opportunity for these people to learn about the gospel before they left. It was in about a two-week period of time. We were able to meet him in this period of time, by coincidence, you could say. And my companion had already lived in Hungary, and he knew the members there. He was able to give the addresses further. And yeah, these people are now active members in Hungary, building up the ward in Budapest.
These young men, and soon to be young women coming as missionaries, are demonstrating a real faith in God as they experience a harvest of precious souls. In the embracing of the gospel, which is taking place, the first missionaries to enter that nation indicated that the reception was like the day of Pentecost. There was a pent-up demand, a pent-up urging, and a desire really for spiritual things. And the growth has been dramatic.
Therefore, if ye have desires to serve God, ye are called to the Lord. For behold, the field is wide and ready to harvest. And lo, he that trusted in his city with his mind, the same live up in store, that he perisheth not, but bringeth salvation to his soul.
I would just tell people to listen to, start to listen to their hearts. I just know that God lives. He answered all my prayers. I know that we need a Redeemer, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and I'm so thankful for that.
A lot of these saints, the temple is a citadel of strength. It is a place where they come to gain spiritual power. From here, they are renewed and strengthened in their labor of love to publish the gospel of peace.
The history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in this part of Germany is a legacy of patient dedication founded on fellowship, forgiveness, and the dream of freedom. Whatever challenges the future may hold, German Latter-day Saints will continue to find comfort in their fortress of faith.
Sing, O heavens, and be joyful, earth, for the feet of those who are in the east shall be established, and break forth into singing, all mountains, for they shall be smitten no more, for the Lord hath comforted his people, and will have mercy upon his afflicted.
Thank you.
never to attend it. And Bhaja always said, the Lord is, has the right and the power. And therefore we never should have doubt. All things we have addressed for prophets and apostles and other authorities had come to the country in the meantime and had read their prayers and their blessings with us. And we could feel it. If you are in such a situation as where you can feel that these are not only words, it is a blessing. And you feel stronger. And you feel thankful and you feel humble to the Lord that is so great and so dear to you, that the distance from me to him is the same as from America to me. And you can shorten this distance by your belief. And that's what we learned at that time. And I think it was a great time. And when the temple was ready, we all said, now let us be worthy and let us live down so that we can, that the temple can be made in this country. It will.
For a videotape copy of Fortress of Faith, send a check or money order to KBYU TV, Provo, Utah 84602, or call area code 801-378-0050 during business hours.